You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Oh, yeah, boys. Mixed martial arts. How do we like our martial arts? We like them mixed!
Oh, yes. It is that time. What is up, my friends? We appreciate you for joining us on this, the final MMA fighting preview show of the year. Yes, this is the UFC Vegas 66 preview show here on MMA Fighting. My name is Sean Oshadi, and I'm joined by the gang. You already know. We got the man with the best tattoos in MMA. He just came off. I think he has like another 40 on his leg right now that he just got. Mm-hmm. He is Jose Youngs.
Yo.
We got the Prince of Positivity, the man in the North, the King in the North, Alexander K. Lee.
What up?
New background for AK, too. This is all very exciting.
Temporary.
And of course, the undefeated E. Casey Lane, man in the boards. And also, you guys as well. Thank you for tuning in. I like that. That was nice, Casey. We are going to jump to all of it. We're going to feel your questions, comments later on in the show. But first, let's get rolling, fellas, because we have a lot to get to. As I said, there has been, I think, 41 UFC events this year. So 41 up, 41 down in 2022. We finally have landed here, number 42 right here, the year-end send-off, the final show of the year. And it's not exactly some stacked pay-per-view like we get some years. But you know what, AK? It's also really not that bad either. Actually, like in a sneaky way, there is a lot to like here. You've been known to rate cards every now and then. You dabble, you could say. What's the gymnastic scale for you for UFC Vegas 66 this weekend?
I was pretty harsh on 282. I gave it like a degree of difficulty, like 8.5, 8.6. And I think a lot of people were thrilled with how that card turned out. So they would, I don't know if they would rate that card like afterwards a 9 or something, but I actually think it just kind of hit its peak with having like a bunch of finishes and, you know, and then it kind of faltered obviously at the top with two fights that weren't bad, but left a bad taste in people's mouths for various reasons. So this card, I like it. I just don't know if I can like go into the 9 range. It's like, it's not, I feel like it's not quite, you know, like 9 is like the minimum for a pay-per-view. So I don't think it's like quite at a pay-per-view level, but it's not a bad fight. It's a good fight. It's a really solid fight. So I'll go a little higher than 282 because 282, you know, got hurt by a lot of changes and stuff, but I'll go higher than that pay-per-view. Let's say 8.8. Everything goes well. Degree of difficulty for this card, 8.8. I like the lineup.
8.8. I mean, is it the main event holding you back? Because it feels like this is a very deep card, deeper than I think we usually get on these weekends.
I just think that, like, cards like this where we like the, like, I like the matchmaking, but making good competitive matches doesn't always make for super exciting fights, if that makes sense. Like, people, for example, people loved 282 because there was a lot of finishes. But to me, a lot of finishes on any card, it means the fighters are good, but it also sometimes means we may have been given some mismatches. Because again, you can go to any regional show, like look at any 10, 12 fight regional show if you want to see finishes. You'll see like 75% of the fights and his finishes every time, because it's just the talent gap is usually so big. And that shouldn't happen at the UFC level, but it does. We saw some of that at 282, which again was a really fun card. I'm just reminding people, like, just because you see a lot of finishes, it doesn't make it an amazing card. And the same thing with this card. I don't know if we're going to see a lot of finishes necessarily on Saturday, and that doesn't make it a bad card. But I could see people, you know, going like, oh my gosh, like three or four decisions in a row. And even if they're like good competitive fights, kind of like rolling their eyes and like tuning out. That's just kind of how it is watching MMA these days.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Jose, we're going to jump around a lot today because, as we said, there's a lot to talk about. But let's start, obviously, with this main event. Jared Cannonier, Sean Strickland. We have the middleweights on the marquee this weekend. These guys have both been out since July. They both last fought at UFC 276. It's actually kind of funny that we're getting this matchup. It's really this springboards that the stepping stones that sort of led us to Izzy versus Pereira 3. And so if you look at our rankings on the website on MMA Fighting, this is number 5 versus number 11. What do you make of this matchup, Jose? Do you like it? What's at stake here for 185? Just what's your overall look at what we're dealing with?
Yeah, I liked this fight from this because they actually made this fight themselves. I'm pretty sure Sean Strickland like posted something on Instagram and or vice versa. One of these two gentlemen posted something on Instagram and the other one commented in the Instagram comments, is like, hey, you want to fight next? And they were like, all right. So then that's how this fight was made. So anytime two gentlemen want to fight and the UFC actually makes the fight, and I actually do think this fight makes sense, considering Sean Strickland, if he had beaten Alex Pereira, was probably going to fight Israel Adesanya for the championship, and Jared Cannonier had just fought Israel Adesanya for the championship. Jared, if he wins, is not going to get the next title shot. If Sean Strickland wins, he's not going to get the next title shot, because that's obviously probably going to be the rematch between Pereira and Adesanya. So I like this fight. Both of these gentlemen seem to want to fight. They want to stay active. Sean Strickland seems down to fight any human being in the world. Jared Cannonier obviously wants to keep his name in the headlines. Sean Strickland, as several middleweights have said, they were down to fight him. I think it was Dricus du Plessis. They asked, like, would you be interested in fighting the winner of Cannonier Strickland? He goes, I'd be interested in Strickland because he makes my name bigger. Like, he just brings more eyeball. So for Jared, this is a good matchup. For Sean Strickland, this is a good matchup. I think this matchmaking makes sense. Both of them have headlined in the past. I know there's other fights on the card that I think collectively we're more interested in terms of the actual fight itself. But I don't have a problem with this being the main event, considering one just fought for a title and the other one has several main events under his belt.
Yeah, I mean, AK, let's bring you back in here. I mean, at this point, it feels like we have a really good sense, right, of who these guys are at 185. This is not some new up-and-comers. This is not, you know, a testing ground, a proving type of matchup. These are two fairly established guys. You have a lot of experience, a lot of game tape to study between these two men. They both headlined events. Who's a bigger intrigue to you still, sort of here at 185? Because it is a very new 185, right? This is not the old 185-pound division that we were talking about. It feels very new and refreshed with the new champion, obviously, at the helm.
It's hard to say that either guy carries too much intrigue, to be honest. Like, I don't mean to crap on the main event, but we'll get into, like, sort of, I think there's some other fights in the card that are why we're sort of saying this is one of, you know, why this is a fine fight night to end the year. The main event is okay. It's two legitimately ranked guys. I assume they're both top 10 in the UFC. I know Cannonier is top 5 in the MMA Fighting Global rankings, and as Sean Strickland, just outside the top 10. So, like, as far as credentials go, good stuff. Stylistically, on paper, seems like a good matchup. Both guys with pretty decent stand-up skills. But you mentioned, like, that we kind of know these two guys. We kind of have an impression of them. And I think that's what's taken a little bit of the excitement out of it. I think we know them almost too well. I think we see a ceiling for both these fighters. And I hate to judge fighters just by, like, oh, will this person ever be a champion? Because, I mean, there's so many other metrics by which to judge, you know, how fun a fighter is and how much we enjoy watching a fighter. But both these guys have kind of had their kick at the can in a way. Cannonier just coming off the fight with Israel Adesanya. And it sucks because that's probably the most watched fight he's ever had. And it was a bit of a stink bomb. It wasn't a great performance on his part I think it was fine for Israel Adesanya, but not a great performance for Jared Cannonier. And Sean Strickland fought Alex Pereira, who's the champion now, and just got completely, like, smashed. So I don't know if this, on paper, you just look at the rankings next to the numbers next to their names. This should have some sort of title implications, but I think we kind of know it doesn't. And I think a lot of us are doubtful that as long, like, even though Pereira is a new champion, maybe that means Cannonier, you know, gets another shot. Maybe Strickland can talk his way into another shot at Pereira, or Pereira loses the belt, and then Strickland can fight whoever the champion is down the road. It doesn't feel like there's a lot on the line in that aspect. So I would implore people, if they're trying to find like intrigue in this fight, it's definitely not in, you know, where the winner might go after, because I don't think there's a direct line for them to get to the title at any point. But, you know, just enjoy the stylistic matchup and this clash of certainly distinct personalities, I guess, to put it nicely.
Yeah, I mean, Jose, you're someone who I think always has a very good broader sense of the bigger picture and what certain fights mean. Do you agree with AK? I mean, at this point, it feels like this middleweight division, obviously we're gonna have the rematch between Izzy and Pereira at some point down the line. In February, it looks like ostensibly we're gonna get Paulo Costa and Robert Whittaker. That feels like a very important fight for the division as well. What does this one mean in the grand scheme for you? Is there any sort of contention on the line? Is it just a hold your place type of matchup? What is this one?
I think it's a hold your place fight this month, because we have other middleweight fights happening too. We have obviously Imavov versus Kelvin Gastelum. Drigas Duplessis just fought. They just announced Roman Dolidze is fighting Marvin Vettori. So these are all top 10, top 15 middleweights that are now booked up. Obviously, if you throw Khamzat Chimaev in there, that's also interesting. Whether Paulo Costa actually fights Robert Whittaker is also interesting too. So I think this is a hold your place, because once we get through February, we'll have a better picture of matchups that we can make, or even March, because I believe Dolidze and Vettori is happening in London. So, and we don't even have a date for the middleweight title fight rematch between Pereira and Israel Adesanya. So this is a hold your place this month. After February, even after January, we'll start to get a better picture. Sean Strickland will probably, if he wins, actually win or lose, Sean Strickland will probably want to stay active. So even if he loses and they want to make that Drigas Duplessis fight, so be it. Chris Curtis obviously just came off a big win too. So those are other top 15 middleweights in the UFC ranking, I'm assuming. But for right now, Sunday morning, whoever wins, this is a hold your place, and the winner will probably fight someone else in the top five after March or February, whenever.
Yeah, it's hard to see it any other way, right? This division's sort of in a holding pattern until we can figure out what's going on at the top and sort of get these matchups booked and ready to go, especially with the Paulo Costa thing, depending on which direction that goes. Also, apologies for my internet. I don't know why Cox Communication decides now to crap out on me in the middle of all of this, but apologies for that. AK, let's throw it to you, man. I mean, when you look at this matchup, what are you leaning? How do you see this going, playing out on Saturday?
And I actually think this is a kind of a nice bounce back matchup. I mean, maybe for both guys, but really for Strickland. Like, I'm working on predictions as we speak. Maybe I need to break down sort of like the intricacies of their striking a little more. But I just really like the high volume game of Strickland. I lean that way a lot in a lot of fights. Unless we're talking again, like you're dealing with an Alex Pereira, where one guy has like one shot, you know, KO power, and the other guy's a little more, you know, pitter patter, then I'll lean towards the power guy. But in this case, Cannonier has knockout power for sure. Very dangerous. But that pressure of Strickland, man, it's tough to beat. And I'll admit, I was very influenced by a stat I saw tweeted out by statistician Richard Mann earlier today. He noted Jared Cannonier has gone 2-4 in fights that go to decision. The UFC has been outlanded in 5 of those 6 fights. So 4 of his UFC losses have come by way of decision. Now, those fights were losses to Izzy, Robert Whittaker, Jan Blachowicz, and Glover Teixeira. So no shame there. Maybe people would not put Sean Strickland in that tier. I certainly wouldn't. But I do think there's a pattern of people who are sort of able to outwork getting a decision off of them. So would not surprise me to see a Cannonier knockout for sure. But I think this goes to a decision. And if that's the case, I lean towards Sean Strickland.
Jose, you see it the same way?
I think Jared will get this done. Sean Strickland is obviously very good at what he does, and that's walking forward and marching people down. But of all the people that Alex AK just mentioned, like the Glover Teixeira, the Israel Adesanya, the Robert Whittaker's, like those guys can put you to sleep, or they can just overpower you with volume. I don't think Sean Strickland has the knockout power that everyone else, especially like Glover. And like Dominic Reyes knocked out Jared Cannonier, if I remember correctly. So Sean, of all the names, if you were to rank them, I would put Sean Strickland at the bottom in terms of power. Jared Cannonier was also losing to Derek Brunson before he dribbled his head off the canvas with his elbow. If he can take Sean Strickland down and kind of control him like he did, and Derek Brunson is a much better wrestler than Sean Strickland, I think Jared will get it done. I see him, especially with five rounds to work, I could very feasibly see a world where Jared Cannonier finishes him in the third or fourth round. I don't think Sean Strickland is going to frustrate him like Israel Adesanya did. I think the power that Israel Adesanya had obviously plays a factor when you're fighting him, and that's why everyone talks about, like, you kind of get lost in there with Israel because you're trying to find an opening. But if you do find the opening, there's always the danger of getting put to sleep like Paulo Costa or Robert Whittaker. I don't think Jared Cannonier is going to approach Sean Strickland quite the same. I think he's a guy that could power forward just like Sean with power. So I'm going to pick Jared Cannonier either third or fourth round stoppage.
Yeah, I think I lean towards where you're seeing this, Jose, because to me, the 25 minutes feels like the key, right? Like, this, if this was a 15-minute fight, I feel as if I would favor Sean Strickland. But with 25 minutes to work and Jared Cannonier having just come off, I think, a performance that all of us, even himself, would probably describe as very listless. And I'm sure he has a lot of regrets about not maybe trying to push the action more and try to be more aggressive and try to make his own, decide his own fate in that Izzy fight rather than just sort of leaning back and letting it happen, come to him. I would be stunned if he was able to, if he went out there and had a repeat type of performance where he just let somebody outwork him for 25 minutes without really pushing the issue. So that's, I see it the same as you, Jose. I lean towards Jared Cannonier, maybe like a third or fourth round stoppage, something late. But ultimately, we shall see. It is an interesting matchup nonetheless, but there are more interesting matchups on this card, in my opinion. So let's move on. Let's keep it moving because, as I said, we have a lot to get to. And I want to talk about the people's main event because this co-main event is really delightful to me. It's one that illustrates why 155 is the best division in the damn sport and just how deep this whole division is. Mm-hmm. Arman Tsarukyan versus Demir Ismagulov. Number 5 versus number 15 on our rankings. Two of the most intriguing up-and-comers in the UFC's lightweight class, I would say. Tsarukyan's 5-1 over his last 6, and I think a lot of people think that should have been 6-0. And then Ismagulov is 5-0. Jose, on the surface, do you like this matchmaking? Because I do, as much as I like this fight, it pains me to continue to see these young up-and-coming lightweights fight each other rather than the more ingrained people in this division.
I really like the fight as a fight, but it's the same thing as when Gamrot fought Tsarukyan. It felt like that happened because, like you said, no one in the top, what, 5 to 7 are willing to risk their spot. Like Armin Tsarukyan versus like Poirier or Gaethje or Fiziev or any of these cats, that's a scrap. Same as Ismagulov versus any of those guys. It's the same problem that welterweight is having. Like, just no one can break into that top 5 because no one in the top 5 is willing to risk their spot, and they all just want to fight each other. Michael Chandler being thrown into that top 5 a couple years ago obviously added another wrinkle to it. I love the fight. I really love this. I love everything. The only thing wrong with this fight is it's not 5 rounds. As a high-level martial arts competition, this checks all of the boxes. I just wish it wasn't happening right this second. Now, I'm not complaining that we're going to watch it on Saturday. I just wish that, I'm going to keep talking about, like, when Gamrot fought Tsarukyan, and that could have been a number one contender fight in, like, 1 or 2 years. That could have been a title fight 1 or 2 years. Could it have? I mean, it could have. The rematch could be for that too down the road. Like, Armin Tsarukyan fought Islam Makhachev in his second fight in the UFC. That right there, when Max Holloway fought Dustin Poirier for the first time, Max Holloway was like 21, 22, something like that. So we've seen it before. Like, these things can happen. So love everything about this fight. I just wish it was in an arena and it was 5 rounds and there was more at stake for like the immediate winner, if that makes sense.
No, I think that makes a ton of sense. And that's sort of, I guess, where I'm coming from as well. It feels like this is just almost too early, right, to have this fight. But as much as I love it, like, it is such a good fight. AK, is this fight to you illustrative of maybe the problem at 125 or at 155, but also like why this division is so good? Or do you actually like where the UFC went with this, pitting these two young up-and-comers up against each other rather than other options?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm focusing on the positive. Of course, I'd love to see Manstrukian in the mix there with like the Gaethjes and the Dustin Poirier, Michael Chandlers. I mean, they, you know, just to give them that up. But I also understand that's that right now, that's not how things work. So if we're, if the consolation is that we get two prospects, not our prospects, two top flight contenders having to face off, having to put their like their streaks on the line. Well, I shouldn't say streaks, but we said, like we said with Sarukyan, feels like he's kind of on a win streak. Put their incredible records on the line, their incredible reputations. There's so much buzz around these two guys. And like with the Gamrot fight, I don't like to think that, oh, whoever loses is going to lose a lot, because I think the Gamrot fight was an example of, man, both guys were elevated by it. One, it helped that some people thought Sarukyan won that fight, but it was just so competitive. One of the five best fights of the year. I have a feeling it's going to make the top five list when we do the MMA fighting year-end rankings. Pretty sure it's going to pop up on there. I know it's my best friend Mike Heck's favorite fight of the year. I don't know if it'll be his number one, but it's like his personal, his favorite fight of the year. I know that that he really enjoyed watching, and I know a lot of people share that sentiment. So yes, listen, we can, as I kind of said with the main event, we can focus on rankings, we can focus on, oh, what does this mean for both guys, you know, contender title fight chances in the future, or you can just focus on the matchup and how awesome it is. I fully agree though with Jose. This should be a five rounder. We really need to get around to making more five round main events. Sorry, not main events. Five round fights. You know, for matchups that are just worthy of it. Like I don't know who's could make these decisions, but whatever it is, pay the fighters more if you want to give them a couple of extra rounds, and let's get guys like Ismagulov and Sarukyan on there for 25 minutes, because it's weird. These guys both could be future champions. And in the case of Sarukyan, he's taking so many of these tough fights. Like before he's even close, like none of these fights have been like a number one contender, two fights away. It feels like he has such a long climb, but look at this. Makhachev in his first fight, I believe he was a replacement. I don't think that's supposed to happen. Future PFL champion, Olivier Aubin-Mercier. And it was a pretty
millionaire.
Millionaire. And that's a pretty clear win for Sarukyan. Matt Frivola, who's on a two fight win streak right now. Joel Alvarez was on a four fight win streak before he ran to Sarukyan, and Sarukyan just like annihilated him. So it's crazy. In some ways, it's good that he gets to get all these tough competitive fights. He's only 26 years old. Iron sharpens iron. Who knows how good this will make him in the future? But it's also a tough break for him because he doesn't really get to kind of pad his record like a lot of people coming up had got to. Even like an Islam Makhachev, who again one of maybe the best fighter in the world, had got to avoid fighting some ranked opponents on his way up. Sarukyan has not had that luxury. So, but again, I don't want to focus on that. I just like that we get to see Sarukyan fight Ismagulov sooner rather than later. That's a plus in my books.
I'll tell you what, AK, that first fight between Gamrot and Sarukyan is not in my top five fights.
It's hard, man.
That is solely because my rankings are based solely on ones I witnessed live. But that is very clearly one of the five most entertaining fights.
It's hard this year, man. Like, this is a tangent.
It is.
We will actually talk about this later on. We're going to do a year-end awards show this year in a couple weeks. But, like, when you're putting together these top fives, I did not realize how much I was going to have to leave out. Like, there are so many good results, whether it's knockout, submission, fight, whatever. Like, there are a lot of categories where I'm feeling bad about what I'm having to leave out of my top five. You don't realize how good this year was until you're really looking at it all in retrospect. Jose, I mean, AK ran down the line there of Arman Sarukyan's UFC resume so far, and it's really monstrous when you look at sort of the lineups that he's been getting, the type of opposition he's been going against. I mean, he has not gotten a lot of easy favors, and he's done very, very well with it up to this point. Demir Ismagulov has sort of been on the side doing a lot of this, I would say, without a lot of eyes on him, right? He's not getting big names. He's not getting big matchups. This is sort of the coming out party opportunity for him. When you look at both these guys, though, I think obviously they're both the future at 155, but who do you like more? Like, who's a bigger threat in your mind at 155?
I think Arman Sarukyan is more dangerous. I think Demir Ismagulov's style will lead to a longer career, like a longer sustained success, because he doesn't make a lot of mistakes and he doesn't take a ton of damage. Arman Sarukyan doesn't. I'm not saying Arman Sarukyan is in these like fight of the nights, fight of the years, like Michael Chandler, but he gets in these back and forth fights. And I think if you look at Demir Ismagulov's resume, his wins in the UFC, we understand that beating Guram is not easy to do whatsoever. What was that, his second, third fight in the UFC? Guram's first win, Guram's debut was a win over Gamrot, the guy we were just talking about that beat Armin Sarukian, and Guram beat him. And then obviously Joel Alvarez, Thiago for UFC headliner Thiago Moises, who lost to Islam Makhachev, and then Joel Alvarez and Rafael Alves and all that. So he's has a very, very difficult resume too. It's that lightweight is so stacked that you could be ranked 19 to 25th and you're still a world beater. So I think his style of fighting will lead to a longer sustained success, but right now in 2022, I think Armin Sarukian is more dangerous.
It's tough. It's tough. That is one reason why, as much as we talk about it in the intro of this fight, like, I still really do love this fight ultimately. It is the people's main event for a reason.
So good.
AK, you've been known to matchmake a bit, just a little bit. You dabble again. Is there a chance that the winner of this fight gets one of those high profile names next? Whether it's like a Tony Ferguson, whether it's a Michael Chandler, whatever. You know the names that I'm talking about, the names that are sort of squatting on these rankings at 155. Is there a chance either of these dudes gets it next?
No. that's my back. Firm answer. This is at a glance. Obviously, no one's getting a title shot. And then behind Islam, you have Charles Oliveira, Poirier, Gaethje, Dariush, Chandler. I mean, the UFC does hate Beneil Dariush, so God knows they might make him fight one of these guys. I don't know, but I doubt it. I think he's done enough to stay slightly above them tier-wise and not have to fight one of them. Michael Chandler, no. I mean, listen, he's been trying to speak the Conor McGregor fight into existence, and it's possible it might actually happen. I don't know. A lot of people think it's a good option. Then you get to like Fiziev, Tony Ferguson. Again, Gamrot, Sarukian already fought him. They're just not going to get into that top six or top seven, though. That's the issue. Like, I feel like they're going to keep mashing these guys who are not quite at that A level of notoriety against each other. Again, and that's fine. Again, for us as fans, that's cool. We get to see these fun matchups from, as Jose said, anyone from like 10 to 30 in the lightweight division. It's like a sick matchup. So it's great for us as fans. It does suck a little bit for Sarukian and Ismagulov, but they're, you know what? They're, Ismagulov is maybe just in his prime. How's Ismagulov? 20-something, 20, not even 30. Neither guy's even 30. Sarukian, I don't even think is in his athletic prime yet. So maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a good thing they don't necessarily get these big fights yet. But hopefully by the end of 2023, one of these guys is fighting a top eight guy, or at the very least is in talks to or has the fan support to like, yeah, why isn't this guy, you know, fighting a top eight guy? Because right now I'm not feeling that push, that ground roots push for either of them. Maybe I'm wrong. Social media, if I'm wrong, let me know. But I feel like, again, most people are kind of just enjoying where these guys are now and not necessarily demanding that the doors be knocked down for them.
I think they're going to have a guy like when Tony fought Charles Oliveira, like, and Charles won, that was like his big push. I think the winner of this should fight Dan Hooker on that Perth card, because Dan Hooker is down to fight any human being on that card. Dan Hooker might not have the ranking, but he has the name, if that makes sense. Like, he's going to get the city kickboxing push. He's very popular. He's coming off a win. The winner of this should fight Dan Hooker in Perth.
Ah, man. I just, the slow crawl of the lightweight division is just so frustrating, because I don't even know that a Dan Hooker fight gets you to a Justin Gaethje fight or a Michael Chandler fight or anything like that, right? Like, it's
I selfishly want Fiziev to fight Justin Gaethje, so I'm not going to have either of the winners of the main event fight either man, because I don't want to lose that fight. Chandler's probably going to fight Connor. Dustin's probably going to hang out for a bit. Charles already said he's taking a break. Gamrot just beat Sarukian. RDA is going up to welterweight. Jalen Turner just has shoulder surgery. Moicano, I guess, is there too. So, like, literally the next man up are just Moicano and Dan Hooker, process of elimination. And Dan Hooker is the more popular fighter.
I mean, money Moicano is coming on. You never know. All right, Jose, how you seeing this going, man?
I think, like I said, I think Sarukian is more dangerous right now. And people know that I've been a fan of I've been talking about Gamrot since before he's even got into the UFC. And I believe I scored it for Gamrot I can't remember how he scored that fight against Sarukian, but a win over Gamrot is huge. I think right now Sarukian gets it done. I think he's more dangerous. I think Ismagulov, his style is he negates his opponent's strengths, if that makes sense. And he, once you run out of things to do, his game plan is to just dominate you. I don't think he can do that against Armin Sarukian, who is so, so good at fighting. I think right now Armin Sarukian gets it done. I'm going to say 3-round decision. If it was 5, I bet he could get a finish. But right now, I think he gets it done. 29-28 maybe. But I do think he wins. I'm not saying robbery, controversial, whatever. I think he wins a comfortable decision.
Comfortable decision. All right. AK, do you see the same? You going Sarukian on this one?
Jose just suggested the possibility of he said it won't be a robbery, but just the word triggered me. It's been a year, guys, of some pretty controversial fights with some pretty controversial figures, and my mind is just has just partially melted from hearing that word. But I agree that Sarukian's going to win. I think he's going to finish him. I think he'll be the first guy to finish Ismagulov. Maybe I'm just being optimistic and I want to witness something I've never seen before. But I love that Sarukian is a finisher. Ismagulov hasn't really properly finished a fight in a while. I think he's I'm looking at his record. One by hand injury. His opponent injured his hand, so that was his last finish. He hasn't actually finished someone in 5 years. So, which isn't to say that he hasn't dominated some of his opponents. Just like, I like to see that extra gear. I like to see that killer instinct. I think Sarukian has that right now. Easier said than done against a guy like Ismagulov, who has excellent defense in striking out on the ground. But I'm super, super high on Sarukian, and I really want to see his run start now. I'm being a little impatient. You know, I was saying earlier, like, oh, he hasn't even hit his prime yet. There's still plenty of time for him to have more big fights and go on a run. I just want that run to start now. I'm such a fan of his fighting style. And so this is more of a vibes pick, as Jed Mishu would say. But I'll go Sarukian by TKO round 2.
Wow. I'm a little surprised by this, I have to say. I mean, Jose picking a comfortable decision and you picking a finish. It's a hard thing to pull off against Amir Ismagulov. It's just so difficult against someone with that type of varied skill set. I have to make it unanimous for us, though. I as well going Armin Sarukian. I've been so high on this guy for a while. To me, he looks and feels like a future champion. And I even scored the Gamrot fight for him as well. In my mind, he's on a 6-fight win streak. And I rate Gamrot incredibly highly in this division. So the fact that he was able to, if not win, at least have that competitive a fight, that to me speaks volumes. But I do think this one will be much more competitive than it feels like maybe you guys are saying. I think this might be a close decision. I don't see anybody getting finished. I could see a split decision going either way. But ultimately, I will side with Armin Sarukian as well. Now, fellas, let's look at the rest of this card, because I think there's a lot of nuggets here. There's a lot of little good picks all around, up and down the undercard and the main card, that you could really throw a dart at and enjoy. We'll start with you, Jose. I mean, what else is grabbing your attention on this card? I believe you're muted.
I was indeed muted. Let's see. I am very hyped to watch Amir Albazi fight. I think he's going to fight for UFC championship at some point. I was very, like, before his original opponent was Alex Perez. Before Alex Perez pulled out of that fight, I don't know which fight I was more intrigued by. The Sarukian fight versus Ismagulov, or the Albazi versus Alex Perez fight. Because Alex Perez is obviously one of the best flyweights in the world, has been for a very long time, fought for the title, is one of the rare flyweights that routinely gets finishes in this division. Amir Albazi took a long break for like injuries and so on and so forth. He is so good at mixed martial arts. I'm pretty sure his only loss is to MMA fighting's friend Shorty Torres, and that was like back in the Brave CF scene. I think Amir Albazi, he's not going to fight for the title anytime soon, but I think he's like one of the Sarukians, the Gamrots, the Ismagulovs, where when you watch him fight, you can very easily picture him fighting for a title. Like, I think in a few years, when Muhammad Mahayev fights Amir Albazi, that's going to be bananas. So I am very excited to watch Amir Albazi fight on Saturday.
AK, What about you, man? Are you all hopping up on the Albazi train too, or are you looking elsewhere?
I'm a fan for sure. He's not ranked in the MMA Fighting Global Rankings, but he is a leading Favre. He appears on 3 out of the 8 ballots, so he's right up there. He's on the cusp. As Jose said, maybe inactivity has kind of, you know, spoiled his chance to really rise up the ranks quicker, but he's right there. And also now, unfortunately, losing out on an opponent in Alex Perez. Is Alex Perez and then Brandon Royval, right? Were both stepping in?
Yeah, both of it was originally Perez. He pulled out, and then Brandon Royval pulled out. So either one of those wins, you're a top 5 UFC flyweight, and you're probably a win or two away from fighting for the title.
Oh man, that's tough. And I was just about to say, like, this card, I thought after it lost its original opponents, its top ranked opponents, maybe should have been bumped down, but only because I'm a little surprised that they didn't give a little more shine for Manel Kopp and David Dvorak. Now, I got a poll going here, guys. What UFC Vegas 66 fight are you most looking forward to? Pop this at the beginning of the show. We got a pretty big sample size here. Surikhan Imzmogulov was leading for a while, but right now, 41% Cannoneer Strickland. So maybe I talked it down a little too much. Maybe this is a more intriguing main event than I'm giving it credit for. And second, Surikhan Imzmogulov, 33%. Dober versus Green, 23%. And Kat versus Dvorak at 3%, like nothing for Kat versus Dvorak. And that's a shame. Not a shame on the people who voted, but I think for the UFC for burying this fight so far down the card. That's a really great matchup in the flyweight division. And I would have liked to have seen that. If there could only be one flyweight bout on the main card, I probably would have gone with Kat and Dvorak. It was originally Albazi originally had two different opponents. So normally the UFC won't like reshuffle you, you know, if you lose your opponent, especially a little bit later in the planning stages, as it were. So that's fine. But my sleeper, I'm really excited about Kopp Dvorak. I've been very critical of Kopp. I think people know I'm not like, I haven't been on the bandwagon as much when he came over from Ryzen, then had some like tough decision losses. And everyone was telling me, he's like, oh, he's going to be like, he's still a top 5 guy, like as far as talent and because of what he accomplished outside the UFC. And I'm like, okay, I need to see it. But he's put together some really, really nice finishes. And he's facing someone with an alliterative name, as pointed out by, I think E. Spencer Kite pointed out on Twitter, Ode Osborne, Zalga Zumagulov, now David Dvorak. What a strange coincidence. So we'll see if the consonant killer or the alliterative assassin can get it done. That alone is enough to make this the sleeper fight of the card for me.
And the winners of the flyweight fights need to fight each other. That's what needs to happen.
Oh, Amir Albazi versus if it's Amir Albazi, that's Manel Kopp's next victim.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, there we go. It's all coming together. It's all coming together right now, fellas. I love it. You love to see it. Those were both fine choices, gentlemen. AK, you glossed over it. You kind of lingered on it for half a second. You didn't go into it. Bobby Green versus Drew Dober is just going to be absolute bananas for however long that lasts. Like, those two gentlemen are just maniacs in the best kind of way. And I'm very excited for whatever that is going to produce, because that's going to be fireworks regardless. But I have to say, for my low-key fight on this card, I'm looking down a little bit, and I'm looking at someone who I think could be one of the most intriguing guys in 2023 moving forward. And if he wins this weekend, and that's Jake Matthews. And maybe that doesn't scream excitement for some. I mean, Jake Matthews is a guy who's been in the UFC a very long time at this point. He started extremely young. He was the Raul Rosas Jr. before Raul Rosas Jr., right? I think he got in at like 19 or 20. And he has sort of bounced around and gone win-loss. He's run some and then eventually loses some, but he has found his way and really matured into, it seems like, who Jake Matthews is kind of going to be at his peak in the UFC right now. Because if you looked at his last fight, I came away so impressed from, I believe it was Andre Fialo, when they fought in June. That looks like a different version of Jake Matthews, right? Like, that looks like a Jake Matthews who had finally figured himself out and become who he was supposed to be. And he looked like a physical force out there in that fight. And if that Jake Matthews can now start to make waves in this welterweight division, I am very, very excited for the potential that he could have. So this fight against Matthew Semelsberger, I really like this fight. I think this could be the one that sort of propels Jake into maybe that discussion where we're starting to rank him in the top 15 and we're starting to pit him against these top 15 guys. I'm here for it, because this is someone who, again, he's been in a life a long time. He's only 28 years old. It's one of those he's been around for so long, you think he's older, but he's just in the prime of his career, and I think he's ready to make a run.
Yeah, right. I love it. Jake Matthews made me look like a fool in that last. Not look like a fool. I think I my prediction was right in a when the Andre Fialho fight. People can go back and watch that episode. That the what card was that? That was the UFC 275.
Singapore.
Oh, Singapore. Yeah.
Singapore, UFC 275 preview show, where I said, well, I'm picking Fialho because I think Fialho is such an aggressive guy. He's a real fighter's fighter. Like Jake Matthews is a martial artist, but Fialho is a fighter. Like this guy goes in there to finish, not just to do martial arts. And on fight night, Jake Matthews came out like an absolute maniac. I mean, a technically skilled maniac, like pieced Andre Fialho up, picked his spots beautifully, got a highlight reel knockout. It was amazing. And I was wrong to question him, but not wrong to say that, like, you know, he needed to show. I think that he needed to show more because he showed a lot. All questions answered. Jake Matthews is a martial artist, and Jake Matthews is also a hell of a fighter. He's going in there to finish. So that was awesome. And yeah, against a guy like Semelsberger, great matchup. Semelsberger is a big KO guy. He's gonna go in there. He's gonna leave openings for Jake Matthews to maybe get another highlight reel finish. I love the matchmaking here. Shaheen, excellent choice. Excellent choice.
Yeah, I just loved how mean Jake looked in that fight, right? Like, that's, I feel like, what we've been waiting for.
I'd never seen that before from him.
Mean streak and heat. He came out looking to hurt someone. And I think by the time this is done, by the end of this, he will be a very good case study for why we can't judge these prospects too early. Right, because again, this is someone who took 8 years, more or less, to kind of reach the person, the fighter that he maybe is now. And you know, it's not always a straight line, these roads, as with these prospects. Sometimes there's twists and turns and winding roads ahead. So Casey, let's get you in here, my man, and let's see what the peeps are saying. What are we hearing on the MMA Fighting Live chat?
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prof G Podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prof G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
No, it's really interesting about the Jake Matthews thing because, I mean, I wish we had like archives to go to, like say when Makhachev got knocked out by who knocked him out? It was
the guy that Cowboy had.
It was a jiu-jitsu guy. But like, I really wonder, like were any of us going like, oh, he's done? You know, it's like, you know, I'm really just like. Because, like, you know, Arman and Ismagulov, like, someone's going to lose.
It was Adriano Martins, who's actually a knockout artist.
Oh, yeah, Martins, sorry. I was thinking of the gentleman that knocked out Kevin Lee. I know, but regardless, yeah. He got knocked out by a much less worthier opponent in the grand scheme of things. But, like, I think that co-main event, like, with Jake Matthews or Zerukian and Ismagulov, like, someone's going to lose. But that loser could still easily potentially be a future title contender or champion. It's just, that's how much talent that is. And Jake Matthews, obviously, lots of losses. But, man, we're going to see if it was just a really good night or if he's now the deal.
I'm not even remotely sold on Jake Matthews right now. He beat Andre Fiala, who had three fights in, like, 10 weeks. And then got smashed in his next fight. I think Jake Matthews is very, very good. I think Matthews Semelsberger is also very, very good.
You're not
sold. Yeah. If he goes out there and beats Matthew Semelsberger, I'm still not completely sold because Matthew Semelsberger has I think it's him and Rumble have like the most sub-minute or sub-30-second like stoppage wins. But one of them
the
is Martins.
I think they're the only two fighters to have two 20-second or less knockouts in UFC history.
But one of them is Martin Sanot, and that just doesn't count. So even if you beat Matthew Semelsberger, who has fantastic tattoos, by the way, I still need to see more from Jake Matthews.
But so see, that to me can change your opinion of Matthews coming out of tomorrow night.
I mean, he has a Doomtree tattoo right in the center of his heart. That's pretty badass.
I like the metrics with which you judge these fighters, Jose. But that to me is like really illustrative of actually why I'm so fascinated by him and just generally these guys who have been around for so long that that started so early. Because you're right. I think a lot of people probably feel the same as you, Jose. And that's, again, illustrative of just like we have so much personal history with Jake Matthews at this point. We feel like we know who Jake Matthews is, even if, you know, he may have leveled up and elevated to someone else. It takes a long time to break through whatever that initial perception is of these fighters. And that's, to me, is a really fun part of just watching these guys' career. But yeah, Casey, what are we hearing from the peep?
Not too many questions, but I'm just going to throw this. Oh, that's way too tiny. Hold on.
Also, I saw someone ask about my shirt. I'm repping the man, John Anik. One more sleep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a great shirt. You're not repping the Suns right now.
Well, you know, it's tough times over here in Phoenix. So
They're above 500. I mean, I'd envy that at this point.
That's true. It's tough times in Toronto, too.
I don't know what that's about.
Well, this one's coming from Chase C, who says, if Sarukian has a dominant performance, do they finally give him someone in the top five? And we addressed this earlier, but I don't think so. I think those dudes Those dudes are squatting to fight each other. They know what's coming. Like, the risk is not there.
That is on the UFC. The UFC keeps offering these fights. I mean, and I know you can't force them to fight each other, these lower-ranked guys, but I think AK had it right. It's probably going to be Dariush. I guess they're short.
let's entertain this, though, and let's look at the UFC's top five. Yeah, I guess. Okay, so the UFC's top five, outside the not that the champion is unranked, he's champion. Number one, Charles Oliveira. Number two, Poirier. Number three, Gaethje. Number four, Dariush. Number five, Chandler. I guess Dariush is the only
Who
one.
Who among that is going to take that fight at all?
Dariush, because he doesn't say no to anything, even though he should. but, yeah.
Armin Sarukian has more main events than Beneil Dariush. Let's make it happen.
Wow.
But it's interesting what AK just said, because Dariush should probably take it even though he shouldn't. So, like, we're actually in agreement, like, with these top five guys squatting on their spots. It's like, we hate it, but we also go, that's definitely the right move. It's
the right move for their own personal careers, but it's also incredibly frustrating. Because even you look one spot down on that top five, right, Fiziev. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably a level elevated above our two fighters we're talking about is Magulov and Sarukian, and even he can't convince Justin Gaethje to fight him. So it's just like
he was a guest scrum in New York, and he said he was down to fight Fiziev, but he just had no surgery, so he couldn't fight him now.
It took a long time for him to get to that point where he said, "Yeah, sure, I'll fight him." Because there was a while where he's like, "Yeah, like, what does that fight really do for me?" type of thing. And it's just that's what all of these guys are facing. And it's
because honestly, Dariush should be fighting for the championship. It's just no one's arguing that Volkanovski doesn't deserve a lightweight title shot.
Yeah.
All right. So the answer was no.
Probably no. It'd be cool. It'd be cool. I would love to watch Charles Oliveira versus Armin Sarukian, you know? Like, that's a great fight.
All right. More of a comment.
Forrest Daniel says, this is a hardcore MMA fan's dream card for a fight night at the Apex. Yeah.
It's
hard to argue with that, right? I mean, Jose, you've been in attendance for plenty of those Apex shows. Like, this feels like it would be a cool fight night for that type of environment.
I'm not a guy that hates on the Apex fight cards. This is definitely a fun one.
I mean, the live aspect of it is a lot different than the broadcast aspect of it.
Very much so. I think if watching it on TV, it is sterile. Watching it live, it is so fun. It's so fun
for 15 people. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And for 15 people can't create stars. I mean, I can't think of a particular fight in particular, but like so many of these fights that have been in big arenas, if they were in the apex, it would be like, cool fight, moving on. But now they become legendary, yeah. You know.
Well, you get like Tai Tuivasa doing shoeys with the crowd. You get, you know, the Patty Pimblett crowd.
I'm not arguing that the apex is better than an arena. I think being there live, a lot of people that just complain about the apex, if they go to an event live, they will have less negative things to say. But I will choose a full-out arena every time, every fight.
Yeah, that's fair.
But there's so no reason for the UFC to be doing this other than just like, well, we don't have to. Yeah.
They're going to hotel in Vegas in March at the new Virgin Hotels Arena. All right, so that's going to be, they're branching out.
Going down the street.
No, I have a theory, and this is based off of no information given to me, that we're going to get the much, much demanded live finale for Power Slap that same day. So the Apex might be in use.
Can't wait.
Wah, wah. Power Slap.
Let's get a couple more, and then we'll get out of here with this one. Does Darren Wynn get cut?
Oh, Duran.
Duran, sorry. Duran. And as soon as I said it, I was like, I messed that up. But
I hope not.
I don't think so. Do you guys think so?
It's tough. I think if he would have lost, yes. But the fact that he passed out and knocked himself out, I don't think they're going to cut him off of getting injured like that. But
yeah, he's only on a one-fight losing streak. I think it was just a weird thing.
He's lost.
That happened.
Yeah.
He's in a 1-3 stretch.
But 3 of 4, and one of them he missed weight, and one of them he popped, and one of them he missed weight, and then he got finished. So it's like every single fight there was other factors in it. So if he would have lost, I feel like this would have been it.
But I think the fact that people even know who he is kind of a thing, because I know there's so many 0-2 whatever guys who are still in the UFC, and they come up on an Apex card, we're like, I never heard that name before, and then we look it up in Tapology, it's like, oh, I've actually interviewed that guy and I've seen him fight 4 times, you know, just like, you know what I mean, like, but so I think Duran Wynn just, I don't know, even though he's not a world beater, but there's something unique about him, and I hope he doesn't get cut. Just It's always fun to watch him fight, because he's short.
I think a large part of that is probably his connection to Daniel Cormier, right? Like,
yeah,
he is a lot of these guys, they'll be like a Nate Diaz teammate or a DC teammate or something. And when you have that close connection to someone that we intimately know and follow, and is someone that is that popular, like, that certainly helps. David Sandine says, heard Doug Crosby is working tomorrow. Yeah,
well, he may be.
Hopefully not.
Well, but why wouldn't he be? There's no, at least publicly, there's no, is there any ramifications or any consequences for any of his judging cards last week?
Casey talking about consequences for MMA judges. What are you?
I toss out these softballs and then knock him out of the park. Who knows?
Well, hopefully not.
Casey, did you see the underdogs question from Forrest Daniels? Five underdogs. Forrest Daniels said, I have 5 underdogs to win on Saturday. Who are our most confident underdog picks, on this card?
Ooh, let me look at that.
Who are the underdogs?
Well, I think some of them would surprise you because I'm not going to lie, I cheated. I just looked. I'm a little surprised Saeed Nurmagomedov is apparently an underdog to Saeed Jakub Kakhramonov in the Battle of the Saeeds. I'd have to check. I'm going off Tapology, so I would check DraftKings. But again, we can't look at bets in Ontario on DraftKings anymore. Thank you, UFC and James Krause and Derek Minner. So I'm going off Tapology. And apparently he's a very minor underdog, but I'm surprised he's an underdog at all. And I like Saeed Jakub Kakhramonov. I just thought Saeed Nurmagomedov, just the Nurmagomedov name makes you like a -150 out of the gate, but I don't know. Maybe I haven't examined the matchup enough. So there's one underdog I'm super confident in. And Corey McKenna is also an underdog, and I like Cheyenne Vlismas.
She is an underdog. Why? That's on Tapology. She's a favorite.
On Tapology,
as far she as pickings, more people are picking her to win.
That's why I'm surprised. She's +160. according to the betting odds and topology. Right. So, so that means in other sites, she must be hovering around plus 150, plus 140, yeah. Something like that. But she shouldn't be an underdog. Like, this is, should be more of a pick-em. I'm kind of with the topology people here. I'm probably leaning towards McKenna. So I'm surprised she's the underdog. She is very young, just 23 years old. And, you know, there's it always inconsistency. You never know what to expect. But I just kind of like her ceiling a lot more. And maybe that's how the odds makers are viewing it, that, you know, like Cheyenne Blissmas is a little more mature, it's a little bit older. But I like the skill ceiling of McKenna a lot more. So those are two underdogs I like a lot.
I think we're going to find a lot. We're going to find out a lot about the winner of that fight, because neither woman's wins have substantially aged well. Mm. So a win over the other ones will the winner of that fight will get a lot of answers out of.
Why has why has Velismas been out for so long? She's been out for a year. Is it injury? Do we know?
There was a lot of personal stuff going on.
You can go read, listen, or watch some interviews with Mike Heck on MMAfighting.com. It is there. It's like her story to tell. I feel like a lot of stuff going on in her personal
life. Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. I thought it was like she had like some outside issues. Okay, I was just double checking.
She wasn't in the country for a while.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Cool.
All right. Any more?
I think it's a pick 'em. I think the main event's a pick 'em. I don't think he's an underdog on.
Topology is only 36%.
I am a little bit surprised that Tsarukyan is such a heavy favorite. I expected that one to be closer to a pick 'em, but he's more than 2-1 on a lot of sports books. But I think it's just a lot of people are really high on Armand Tsarukyan.
I think we're picking a competitive fight, but we still got Tsarukyan. So I'm picking Tsarukyan too, and I think it's a freaking awesome fight. But all four of us are still picking Tsarukyan. So it was one of those good fights, but we're all going the same way.
Yeah. What is the line for Alex Caceres and Julian Arosa, a fight that no one talked about on this preview show?
Alex Caceres, the underdog. Underdog, so around plus 150. Okay.
That's interesting.
The books are finally giving Juicy J a little bit of respect.
He's a major favorite on
Tesla. I thought we'd whole show that.
That, dude.
Oh, I thought we'd go a whole show without Julian Arosa having to hear that nickname, but there we are.
Juicy J's wins over like Charles Jourdain and Hakeem Duwadu, and who's in, like, there's someone sandwiched between there, are so impressive. Like, I'm really happy he's finding success now. And I've been a big Alex Caceres fan for a long time. Fun guy. The original Weeb.
We were robbed, of having Juicy J and the Raw Dog on the same card. And I mean, robbed. I think that's a good thing. But I'm sure there's a lot of people.
Why
out there
does
who
Juicy
been really excited.
Annoy you? What's wrong with Juicy J?
Because there's only one Juicy J. Academy Award winner, Juicy J.
Yes.
Put some respect on the name. There you go.
Well,
real quick.
Who's that? I'm so happy.
It's the rapper Juicy J, who's part of 3-6 Mafia.
From Hustle and Flow, that song.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Mafia, come on, man.
You're better than this.
Like if I became a professional fighter and my nickname was Brad Pitt. Same thing. I'm naming myself after an Academy Award winner.
Yes, it's not just that. It's I listen. I'll say it. I'm not comfortable describing another man as Juicy. All right, I'll say it. All right, maybe I need to. I need to grow up. Maybe I need to become more enlightened, more in touch with my masculinity. I can't call another man Juicy. But when we talk about Julian Arosa, it's officially his nickname. We have to call him Juicy J. I respect that, but I'm not a fan. I don't like calling another man Juicy. I don't want to do it.
AK, it's 2022. Get with the time.
I know.
Come on.
I know.
Come on.
It's me. It's Real a me quick. Problem. It's a me problem. It's not Julian Arosa. It's not a you problem. This is a me problem.
Is Real it quick, just the word juice? Here. Like juice? Are you not a Juice World fan either?
It's the E sound that really gets me.
Oh,
juicy, okay.
Juicy.
We're really diving into some parts of AK's psyche right now.
Yeah,
we don't have to.
Just real quick before we get out of here, just throwing this out here. Obviously, we've been talking quite a bit about Paddy Pimblett over the last week. He has quite a history with Juicy J, your favorite AK. They have, Speaking of robberies, I think there is one in the coffers that you could go back and look at that they fought in Cage Warriors that Juicy J was not very happy with the result in that one. And I think you've actually done a robbery review for that, AK. Mm-hmm. Throwing it out there, you could throw it back. Is there any chance at all that if Juicy J does something spectacular this week, he could finagle his way into a rematch with that man?
No. But now that you've mentioned it, God, it makes so much sense, doesn't it? It would make so much sense to run that back in assuming Paddy Pimblett is on that March card pay-per-view in London. Run it back with Juicy J. We know Arosa can fight at 155. That'd be so cool. The storyline would be there. They could, I mean, Graham Boylan, you know, he should be excited about that. Bring up all that Cage Warriors footage, you know, give that promotion a little more gas. It makes a lot of sense. I hope you have spoken this possibility into existence. We know if Arosa wins, he's going to be asked about it. I have to imagine someone will bring it up. Someone of the esteemed MMA media will bring it up. But if not, we gotta get this cooking. I almost spoke Paddy Pimblett versus Tony Ferguson into existence, Shane, a matchup I know you love. And perhaps you can do the same for Julian Arosa.
I'm just saying, he's doing himself a disservice if he doesn't bring it up.
We still don't like the Ferguson thing, Paddy and Ferguson. We still don't like that.
Well, we don't like it, Casey, and we're never going to like it, and we need to stop speaking about it.
It's a great fight. I can't wait for it in 2023.
All right, fight the music.
Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him, UFC matchmakers. Don't do it. Oh, man. Well, that was fun. We appreciate you guys, as always, for joining us. Thank you, Jose. Thank you, Casey. Thank you, AK. And really, again, thank you, fans. This is number 42 for the UFC event, at least. I'm sure we've done some preview shows for other things as well, but we've done a lot of preview shows over the course of 2022. And you've always just joined in and made us feel like family, made us feel loved, made us feel at home. And we appreciate you for that. And so for me, I am Sean Oshadi. Keep it locked to the MMA Fighting YouTube network. We're going to have all your post-fight coverage tomorrow night on Saturday. And hey, tune in maybe for the final post-fight show of the year. We would love to have you. In the meantime, we love you guys. We'll see you. Enjoy the fights.
Stay juiced.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.